Welcome to the Royal Caribbean Blog Podcast, your weekly look into the world of Royal Caribbean cruising. I'm your host, Matt Hotchberg, and this is episode number 528. I just got back from Wonder of the Seas for a spring break cruise, and taking a spring break cruise was surprising in a couple different ways. I wanted to share my cruise experience with you up next. Taking a Royal Caribbean cruise over spring break has become one of our family's annual traditions. Spring break is a week that we have built into the school calendar, which means that, of course, it's easy to take our kids and go. And since my kids are getting older, taking them out of school, like during the school year, is almost impossible now, especially with my older child. It's just not going to happen. So we certainly try to plan most of our cruises around the school calendar. And if you go on a spring break cruise, there's pros and cons of doing so. Obviously, the pro being that, well, there's no time off required from the school calendar, no absences, tardiness, anything like that, and it's really convenient. The downside, of course, is it's spring break. It's a popular time. Prices are higher. There's a lot more demand for it, and that means a lot more ships. I mean, spring break really is one of the most popular times in the winter, besides probably Christmas and New Year's, right? It's probably Christmas and New Year's number one, and then spring break number two, and this leads up into the summer season, but you still have a lot of ships here in North America, which makes it very convenient to do a spring break cruise, because when you get into the summertime, a lot of ships move over to Europe. So from that standpoint, it's nice to be able to take a spring break cruise now as opposed to waiting a couple more months. Moreover, it's also more comfortable outside in spring as opposed to in summer in the Caribbean. I'm talking about the oppressive heat as opposed to just the normal heat. Anyway, again, good things and bad things about it. We picked Wonder of the Seas for our particular cruise, and we always book our spring break cruises early on. In fact, as I'm recording this video, we already have our spring break cruises booked for 2025 and 2026. Knowing full well that we're going to go on a spring break cruise, then we always plan our cruises as far out as possible. So booking them 2 years in advance is actually one of my best tips in general for booking any cruise. But more importantly, it allows you to be having, hopefully, the best possible price, because prices only tend to go up. And a ship like Wonder of the Seas, which is still a pretty new cruise ship, there's still plenty of demand for it. Let's start with the embarkation process in Port Canaveral. You know, parking the car, super easy. Drop off, even easier. You know, I hate to ring the bell because this is something that you can't unring, but the check-in process, in terms of check-in times, seems to be almost meaningless at this point. In the sense that when we got to Port Canaveral, and this has been the case for at least a couple different cruises, no one really cares about your check-in time. And I only say that here because that's been my experience. That isn't to say, by the way, that when you go on your cruise, someone is going to hold you up with your, you know, enforcing that check-in time. But when we got there, the person working there had their like megaphone out or whatever, and he was literally saying, ignore your check-in times, come on in, things like that. So I don't know what to take from that. I'm just simply going to say that it was really easy to get on there and get in. Now, that being said, by the way, if you get there early, cool, but you're going to sit around the cruise terminal. So, you know, pick your poison in that regard. But the bottom line was no lines outside. Checking in is really quick. If you do everything in the Royal Caribbean app, it's even quicker. It's really surprising how soon you can get on board a Royal Caribbean cruise. And quite frankly, I'm pretty astounded when you go on like an Oasis class ship, how quickly they can turn that ship around, because boarding began right before, I'm going to say about 10:30 or so. So by 10:30 a.m., we were on board the ship and ready to go and start our vacation, and that is great. On this cruise, we were sailing with a couple different families that we were going to be enjoying this sailing with. Originally, I had booked a cruise, actually it was a Royal Caribbean Blog group cruise, over to Panama. That itinerary got changed, and that group cruise was subsequently canceled. As a result, many people different scattered that were on that group cruise, and a couple of us from that original sailing ended up booking Wonder. Now, I booked Wonder of the Seas because it's in Port Canaveral. I live near Port Canaveral. It's a new ship, and I love Wonder of the Seas. So for all those reasons, we decided to go on Wonder. For this sailing, this was going to be in Eastern Caribbean with Coco Cay, St. Thomas, and St. Martin. Let's start with Coco Cay because this was really interesting. We got a chance to take my wife and some of our friends over to Hideaway Beach. For Hideaway Beach, I booked the Hideout Cabana. The Hideout Cabana is one of the new cabanas in the adults-only area. Our kids, they've been to Coco Cay a lot of times, love sleeping in. So we said, you know what? You guys stay on board the ship. We're going to enjoy our day over at Coco Cay. And we were over at the Hideout Cabanas, which are the really, I'm going to call them the VIP cabanas, not to make myself sound important because I'm not, but it's more the fact that they really try to elevate this cabana experience over the other cabanas that are there. And not only do you get the traditional cabana experience that we've talked about a lot here on this podcast, but also you get your own little private pool, we'll call it, because all the Hideout Cabanas share an infinity pool that's only available to guests staying at the Hideout Cabanas. And this is truly one of the best, if not the best, cabanas out there. I prefer the Hideout Cabanas to the floating cabanas, over the water cabanas, whatever you want to call them, over at Cocoa Beach Club. I think it's just the best of everything. A lot of space, having access to the infinity pool. I mean, the one thing you don't have access to is the beach, the ocean, which if that's important to you, then obviously this is not going to be a great choice. But for someone who loves the pool, that's just something that works so well for me, and I was really a big fan of that. Now, it wasn't cheap. It did cost $2,000 to rent the cabana, but there were eight of us, and we spent pretty much the whole day over there. So if you break down the per person, per hour cost, it really isn't too bad. And it was a splurge. Don't get me wrong on this. But we wanted to try it out. I thought it would be fun. And quite frankly, I was very impressed by the overall experience. Everything went really, really well. We had a great time. And I have one booked already again for Icon of the Seas when we return with the Royal Caribbean Blog Group Cruise in June of this year. I just think that the cabanas are really one of the best values, assuming the price you can get, right? Sometimes the pricing is crazy, but if you get it for a decent price or a price that you can afford personally, hey, more power to you. Over in St. Thomas, we went over to St. John once again. We actually chartered a boat to take us over there instead of taking a Royal Caribbean excursion, which I really like. It's obviously going to cost you more money to do this, by the way. But the problem with taking a Royal Caribbean excursion is all the wasted time getting over there. I did an excursion to St. John through Royal Caribbean when I was on Icon of the Seas back in January. And we did the, you know, St. John on your own kind of thing. And essentially, that boiled down to, by the time we actually got to St. John on a beach, about 90 minutes of time at the beach. And then you had to go back and, you know, get back on board the ship. It was just, that's what it kind of came down to. By chartering our own boat, we were able to have much more time, be able to enjoy it. Also, we weren't sharing this experience with other people there. It was phenomenal. And I just love St. John. My daughter got a chance to go snorkeling and she saw sea turtles and we had a great time at the beach. And it was just a really enjoyable experience overall. Again, chartering your own boat is not necessarily the most cost-effective thing out there. It might also be a really good idea depending on what your priorities are, but something you can look at in different ports. Maybe there's a catamaran sailing you can take. Maybe there is a sunset cruise, which we've done in Aruba, which was really a lot of fun. It's just something way to kind of get out there a little bit. And of course, St. Thomas is fantastic as well. But I have, every time I go to St. John, I always come back with the same experience, which is that it's the most beautiful beach I've ever been to in my life. And so for that reason, I'm really a big fan of that. And we had a great time. And by the way, the weather across the cruise was really good, except for the last day. We'll talk about that at the end of the episode here. And then our final port stop was St. Martin. And for this port, we looked at a couple different choices, but ended up going back to a resort that we'd been to back in November when we sailed on our first celebrity cruise. There is a resort called the Morgan Resort, and you can purchase it through resortpass.com, and it gives you a cabana in addition to admission into the resort and access to the facilities on there. And the Morgan Resort is located near Maho Beach, which is where the airplanes land that everybody always flocks to. Now, it doesn't have beach access, but it's right on the ocean with an infinity pool, so you got to get almost that beach experience, but you get a cabana that comes with it, which is really nice. And of course, food and drink do cost extra there. But it was a very relaxing day. We had great weather. You can watch the airplanes land very easily. It was something nice to do. There's no doubt in my mind, by the way, that if you're going to St. Martin, there's much more enjoyable beaches out there. But for our group, we thought we want something chill and easy, and we went for the Morgan Resort. That being said, I'm going to make a mental note, so I'm going to remind me of this later on. But when next time I go to St. Martin, I really want to go to the French side of the island. It's been a long time since we've done that, and I think it's time we give that a try again, because I would love to get out there. For dining on this cruise, we had the unlimited dining package, and so we ate at all specialty restaurants, and we tried a couple different ones, Mason Jar, Izumi, Chops, 150 Central Park, and of course, Giovanni's. And when it comes to specialty dining, I kind of want to talk about this more in a global term, as opposed to like going through every single restaurant. When it comes to doing specialty dining or not, couple things have to come to mind. Number one, if you're new to Royal Caribbean, specialty dining shouldn't be the end-all be-all. I gravitate towards specialty dining for a couple of reasons. Number one, my wife likes it a lot and I want to make her happy. Number two, the nice thing about specialty dining is the increased amount of cuisines that are available, you know, in terms of whether it's sushi or hibachi or filet mignon or pizzas. Like, there's just a greater variety and definitely a higher quality to those foods that come with specialty dining. And for our family, we prefer those things. Actually, funny, I say our family. It's really my wife and I, and maybe my oldest daughter. My youngest daughter only eats pizza. Like, she'll eat pasta, right? But that's about it. So for most specialty restaurants, she actually doesn't go. And for that reason, we don't buy her a dining package because she doesn't need one. In that case, we either send her or we pick a pizza before we sit down. or she can go to LocoFresh, depending on where we are and what she's in the mood for. And that's totally fine, by the way. With kids, they're picky, and Royal Caribbean gets that. So don't feel bad that, you know, maybe your kids want to have a slice of pizza from Sorrento's while you're enjoying a filet mignon at Shops. There is no shame about that whatsoever. Now, the biggest issue with the Ultimate Dining Package, up until at least the recording of this episode, is you can't make a reservation until you get on board the ship. Now, that allegedly is going to be changing. Royal Caribbean has said they're working on a new thing, which, by the way, should have been rolled out already to Icon, but it hasn't yet. Anyway, I digress. They're working on a new system where you'll be able to book reservations for specialty restaurants if you already have the dining package, but it's coming at some point this year. We don't have any kind of timeline, so don't ask. That's all I've heard. But it is forthcoming, so when that changes, that'll be a really nice pickup. But until then, that's one of the downsides of it. Certainly, the main dining room was not a problem. I will say, though, and I didn't experience it myself. I can only walk by it. But My Time Dining, man, we walked by. I was at Izumi, which is located on Deck 4, which is the same deck that My Time Dining is at. And at 6:30, the line for My Time Dining looked like a Taylor Swift concert lineup to buy tickets. I mean, it was super long, super crowded. I was just like, man, I'm glad I'm not in My Time Dining tonight. You know, there's pros and cons of My Time Dining versus traditional dining. We could do a whole other episode about that altogether. And I don't want to scare anybody who might have My Time Dining. It's not necessarily a problem, but you got to understand, again, there's pros and cons to it. And I'm not sure if this is the usual experience, because I came back about half an hour later and the line was substantially less. But there can be no longer waits for tables if you're in My Time Dining, especially on, you know, crowded cruises where you have more kids on board. Maybe that's also another factor involved with it. Because if you have kids, maybe you're more inclined to go to the main dining room for dinner, as opposed to cruises that have less kids on there and more adults, let's say. And maybe more adults have more flexible options for when they want to eat. And I don't know. I'm just kind of rolling here in terms of what the possibilities are. But it was kind of eye-opening, some of the lines that are there. Anyway, again, there's nothing wrong with My Time Dining. Just an observation to share with all of you. Going back on Wonder of the Seas, for me, this is also a real gut check in the sense that, is Wonder of the Seas my favorite ship still, or is it Icon of the Seas? And I gotta admit, going on Wonder, I had a great time. Love the ship. I think it holds up really, really well. But I think I really do like Icon better. I don't know. It's hard not to love the changes Royal Caribbean has made with Icon of the Seas. It seems like every new ship builds on the lessons learned from other ships that are out there. And whether it is the new elevators on Icon, or the wider promenade, or some of the new dining venues like Aquadome Market, I couldn't help the entire cruise on Wonder thinking to myself, this is great, I'm loving this cruise, but it's not Icon. And so for that reason, I think Icon is my favorite cruise ship out there. Again, that doesn't mean every other ship is bad or anything like that, just I have preferences, and in this case, Icon, I think, is my new favorite cruise ship out there. That being said, Wonder felt so much better than when I was on Allure of the Seas, which is notably older than Wonder of the Seas. And I sailed on a couple times since Icon, but before Wonder. So I felt like, again, while I preferred Icon over Wonder, I certainly prefer Wonder over Allure personally for the different amenities that are there, like the Mason Jar Bar. My goodness, that is like the best bar on any Royal Caribbean ship. I just love the vibe there, the drinks, the bartenders. It was absolutely phenomenal. I love that quite a bit. Now, I promise you I want to talk about the weather on this ship, because for 6 out of 7 days, we had fantastic weather, like clear skies, or at least maybe partly cloudy skies, but I mean, mostly sun, temperate temperatures. It was really comfortable outside. Very, very nice. No problems at all. The last day might have been the worst weather I've ever experienced on a cruise ship, but not like, you know, like Poseidon Adventure kind of stuff. It was just, basically there was a cold front that was coming through Florida, and we ran into it coming back to Florida. And that brought with it thunderstorms and rain and wind. The seas themselves were not very bad. I think the captain said they were like 10 feet waves, but there wasn't a whole lot of motion, so that's good. But there were legit thunderstorms. I mean, there were a couple times where the rain was really pounding the ship, like you might experience when you're at home and you get a bad thunderstorm and the rain comes in like sideways against your windows. Like, that's what it was like on the cruise. And I was like, wow, okay, that's new. And then, of course, there was a lot of thunder, which something I don't usually hear a lot on cruise ships. And of course, the rest of the day was just, you know, rainy and wet and cloudy. And this is the biggest problem. Nothing you can do about this, but when it's really wet and rainy on an Oasis class ship, it forces everybody inside. Other ships are a little more even keeled, but the Oasis class definitely lean towards outdoor experiences. And so for that reason, on a sea day, when everybody is inside, it really pushes the indoor venues to their limits in terms of capacity. You're going to find Big crowds on the promenade, big crowds in the pub, big crowds in the schooner bar and Bolero's at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which are usually times in which they're not very busy. And so that really kind of makes the experience feel a lot more crowded than it would have felt had it been a sunny day, and that we can certainly have experienced that on our other sea days out there. So when it's a rainy day on a cruise, and I'm going to try to take this advice to heart as well, certainly don't feel like you can't do anything on board the ship. You just have to contend with crowds a little bit more. No, not a big deal. Might wait a little longer, but you can do those things. However, if you reach your point where you're like, listen, I just need a break from the crowds, you know, don't feel bad about going back to your cabin and kind of chilling out. Stream a movie. That's something you could definitely do. Catch up on episodes. You know, do something in your cabin. Take a nap. These are all easy ways to kind of take a relaxing experience and just, you know, kind of take a step back, right? And that was a lesson that I came back with it when we tried to go through the Royal Promenade and it was like super crowded. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going back to the room. I'm going to chill out, wait for dinner to start, and just enjoy a quiet afternoon. So something to keep in mind when you're on any ship for that matter, when it's a rainy day, is maybe that's the day you really take it easy and embrace the two naps a day experience. Overall, we had a really good spring break cruise. I really have no complaints about the experience overall. I mean, the weather is the weather. I have no control over that in terms of that last day. Nonetheless, it was a really fun cruise, and it's one of my favorite times to go, keeping in mind that it's going to be crowded. If you're going to point out there's a lot of kids on board, it doesn't really factor to me at all. I mean, number one, Royal Caribbean's a family cruise line. Number two, ships are going to be full no matter what time of the year you're going. You're basically just trading kids for older adults. I mean, I've always pointed this out. I've been more annoyed by drunk adults on a cruise ship than ever by the kids. But if that's an issue for you, then obviously spring break might not be the best time for you. But the built-in time and the more favorable weather that you can experience in March, in this case, I think makes it a great time to go on a cruise. Just you need to book in advance and be prepared to have plans ahead of time to avoid some of the crowding issues that you might run into while on board. All right, friends, time to answer your listener emails. This is the part of the episode where I answer the emails you've sent me about your Royal Caribbean cruise. First email is from Scott. My family's traveling to Bermuda with Royal Caribbean at the end of July. We are inside the window for tropical storms. Do you recommend buying travel insurance? If so, do you recommend buying through Royal or somewhere else? Thanks for sharing all the great information. Scott, thanks for the email. Do I recommend travel insurance? I do. You know, when I first started cruising, I never got travel insurance. I thought, it's a waste of money. It's for old people. I'm not going to need that. But it's all about risk tolerance. And as I got older and more mature, I realized, oh man, I'm really playing with fire here. So there's a lot of good reasons to get travel insurance. Of course, you know, going through hurricane season and the issues with that, not only just with the ship itself, but getting to the ship and back and other issues. Anyway, long story short, yes, I do recommend getting travel insurance. I don't love Royal Caribbean's cruise insurance. I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but if you're going to look at insurance, my advice to you is to go to a website like tripinsurance.com or insuremytrip.com and compare and contrast the different plans that are out there. Find the right coverage for you. Remember, travel insurance is not like, I don't know, flood insurance. They're not all the same. There's different coverages, different amounts, different policies, what it covers, what it doesn't cover. Read the fine print. But yes, I do generally recommend getting travel insurance. Our next email is from someone else named Scott, not the same person, I swear. Hi, Matt. Just got off a 3-night cruise on Allure of the Seas, which went a perfect day and a sea day. And because this is our first Oasis class sailing, we want to know if it was typical with the class size versus smaller ships. We had a Central Park facing balcony midship on deck 11, but even on the promenade, we were very surprised how much motion we felt, as it never felt this way on smaller roller ships, unless it was a storm, which is understandable. Having sailed in January, February many times, wanted your input. This is typical, or maybe we just a fluke occurrence. We have a cruise on Symphony in April of 2024 in a grand suite and want to better prepare for the motion as this is an 8-nighter. Thanks for your videos and support over the last few years. Scott, thanks for the email. I'm going to say this. Motion in the ocean is number one. There's no accounting for what it'll be on any cruise. No ship is immune to it, whether it's Oasis or Icon class or the Vision class. It can happen on any ship. Number two, it's very personal in a lot of cases. Like, I cruise a lot. It takes a lot for me to get motion sickness, although it does happen every now and then. We were just on Wonder of the Seas this past cruise, and one of our friends who doesn't cruise a lot, I remember he mentioning on, like, day two, he was getting seasick, and I was like, really? Like, there's, like, I didn't feel anything. So there's that factor to it. Basically, Scott, I'm not prepared to provide any generalizations like time of year versus this ship versus that ship versus this class versus that class. It can happen anytime. I'm willing to bet that, you know, your 3-night cruise on Allure this year versus next year might have vastly different conditions. So I don't want it, like, some people think, oh, if you're going on a big ship, you won't feel the motion. That's totally a myth. That's totally not a thing. There's no correlation to that. Just that, yeah, it does require, I mean, the bigger the ship, it requires more motion to move the ship. That's physics for you. But trust me, I've been on a waste of clashes where I felt the motion a lot. And on, when we were on Wonder, I did feel it a little bit here and there, especially on that last day. There was a lot of rolling involved with that storm, but it wasn't too bad at all. Anyway, my point is that, Scott, don't assume that, you know, any ship or any time of year is better or worse than other times of the year. You can experience motion in the ocean just as much as January as you can in March, as September, hurricane season or not. I'm telling you guys, it has no effect on it whatsoever. Next up is an email from Tyler. Hi, Matt. Thanks. Great. Maybe I can read Tyler's email. It'd be better. Glad to hear you had a great time on Icon. I was very interested to hear your take on Empire Supper Club, as we have booked on Icon later this year. We'll be sailing with our kids, but we do not intend to bring them to Empire, as we don't think they would enjoy it at their age, nor do I want to pay $200 for chicken tenders. Have you heard anything about childcare during the meal? Typically, Adventure Ocean opens at 7 p.m., which wouldn't work for the 6 p.m. start time at Empire Supper Club. Thanks again for all the great info. Tyler, thanks for the email. Unfortunately, unless something has changed, there's nothing, I'm not aware of anything. You're kind of stuck. You know, I forget how old your kids are, Tyler. One option is you could leave the kids in the room, and then at 7 o'clock, one of you excuses yourself and goes up to the room, grabs the kids, and then goes and brings them over there. I mean, you'll be out of pocket for, like, you know, probably half an hour from, like, start to finish. It's not ideal, but that's an option, I suppose. There's just not a lot of great choices out there. And the other option, of course, is don't book the Empire Supper Club. For that reason, say for a cruise in which you don't bring the kids with you. But as of now, I'm not aware of a special consideration or option for those at Empire Supper Club who want to eat there, but Adventure Ocean doesn't open until 7. One thing to keep in mind as I'm thinking about it now, I'm not sure if this will really work for you, but if you're ever in port until like 7, Adventure Ocean would be open in that situation, right? Sea days, no. But if you're, you know, as long as your ship is docked in port, Adventure Ocean is open. So if you had a late, like you're in Puerto Rico, Tyler, and your ship is there till like 9 o'clock, as an example, maybe that would work for you, where you could then have Adventure Ocean open for you. But I'm not sure, I don't know what your itinerary is, that that would necessarily be an option for you. But just want to point that out as well. Next email is from Sabrina. Hi, Matt. I feel like I'm emailing a celebrity and a close friend. I've devoured your content over the last 6 weeks as I've planned our first Royal Caribbean cruise. Thanks for all your helpful insight and advice across the website, podcast, and YouTube channel. Can you please explain what onboard activities, like specialty dining time shows, Adventure Ocean, nursery, can be booked for your sailing and when you can book them? I see shore excursions and a few other add-ons, but wasn't sure if others would become available closer to sailing. We're 77 days out. Also, as a content suggestion, it would be helpful to have a video series showcasing the different ports, especially what embarkation looks like at each. I've sailed out of Port Canaveral twice before our upcoming cruise and will be out of Miami. Having never gone out of Miami before, I'd love to see a typical embarkation day looks like as to better prepare. Sabrina, thanks for the email. I really appreciate that. So for when you can book things, let's start with the easy one. 30 days before your cruise, you can book shows if you're on an Oasis, Quantum, or Icon class cruise ship. If you're on a smaller ship, there's no option to make reservations beforehand. You don't need to. But that's 30 days. Everything else in the cruise planner, drink package, shore excursions, the spa, Wi-Fi, those are all, they show up when they show up. I get this question a lot. People book a cruise like a year out or more, and they're like, hey, I booked this cruise, but when am I going to be able to book shore excursions or Wi-Fi or what have you? And there is no exact time. I wish there was a logic to it, but there isn't one. It just shows up at some point. And in a lot of cases, especially if you're that far out, you might one day see, oh, some shore excursions are there and others added later on. It's a guessing game. The only things you really can't book ahead of time at all would be Adventure Ocean and the nursery. You cannot book ahead of time. That's number one. If you're on, obviously, a smaller, relatively speaking, smaller Royal Caribbean ship, Freedom class, a Voyager class, Radiance class, Vision class, you cannot pre-book entertainment ahead of time. There's no reservations required. You just simply show up to those shows anyway. I'm trying to think of other things that wouldn't be, like the rock climbing wall, water slides, things of that nature, right? Everything else, you talked about especially dining. If you book the actual restaurant, then you can pre-book it before the cruise. Again, when that shows up in the cruise planner, depends. If you have a dining package that you can pre-book, cool, but the dining times for that, you have to wait until you get on board the ship until Royal Caribbean rolls out that option I talked about earlier in this episode about being able to pre-book that. But I'm getting ahead of myself there anyway. That's essentially what you can do over there. As for the content suggestion, you know, it's interesting. The embarkation process today is so much more homogenous than it used to be. Back in my day, when I first started cruising, it was really like all over the place. In the United States, out of the major ports in Florida and Galveston and New York, it's pretty much all the same. I mean, yeah, the layout of the terminal is different, but they're more the same than they're not. If you've done Port Canaveral twice, Miami is going to seem exactly the same, just a different layout to the building. In fact, you might even find it a little bit faster. The new Terminal A in Miami is amazingly efficient, quite frankly. So for that reason, I don't think you're really going to find it that much more different. Just different layout, different directions, obviously. But Royal Caribbean has really spent a lot of time and money and effort trying to make it more similar so that when you're not going from like one extreme to another. The exception are ports like maybe Los Angeles, Boston, and then in Europe, I mean, it is a little bit different over there. But if you're going from Port Canaveral to Miami, you're not going to have any problems with Sabrina. It's really, really simple. All right, friends, that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us here. Be sure to send me your emails, matt@royalcaribbeanblog.com. Until next time, I'm Matt. Talk again real soon.